The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Thanks for joining us. It's the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. Something tells me a lot of you have been looking forward to this show this week because there have been a lot of current event numbers that have come out that might have grabbed your attention and you want to get some insight and some clarity on what those numbers might mean. You've come to the right place. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management, where they are about managing your investments. Investments are exceedingly important if you want to arrive at financial independence later on in life and have a successful retirement with an income stream coming in, manage your taxes, lots of different things that we touch on this show, and we will touch on them today. And we look forward to doing that with you. The show will replay tomorrow at noon, but we're glad to have you with us. Aptus offers you a free consultation if you'd like to gain greater insight and understanding into what's going on in our economy right now and where we are headed. Set that up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, or you can set that appointment up by making it online, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. They're located in Lewis Center, not far from 23 and 270. Their office is located just off Route 750. So, Josh, probably the thing that caught people's attention because it's the most recent thing is the GDP number, quarterly GDP number, 1.6%. The anticipation was it would be 2.4%. Bottom line, it's significantly lower than people anticipated, and now people are starting to throw out things like stagflation. We've heard of inflation. Why are people talking about stagflation, and what, as it pertains to what you specialize in at Aptus, is worthy about a GDP number that's lower than anticipated?
Sure. So we've talked a lot about the different metrics on how we measure unemployment or how we measure all of these different things, but ultimately things are kind of boiled down into three categories. And that is, what are the costs of things measured by inflation? How many people have jobs measured by some form of unemployment? And then GDP growth, which measures how much is the country as a whole producing and growing. Mm-hmm. And stagflation is when GDP growth is down. So obviously the country is producing less. Unemployment starts to rise even amidst that. And then we still have rising prices. So ultimately, we have an environment where people don't have jobs, the country isn't growing, while simultaneously, the cost of everything is getting more and more expensive. So in my opinion, as we look at all the different, you know, rising inflation, lowering inflation, deflation, inflation, stagflation is arguably one of the scariest ones. And the reason for that is you can kind of plan and predict for, let's take what happened during COVID. So obviously COVID was a terrible time, but if you were reasonably wealthy and had money invested in the market, when the government started printing all of the money, where was all that money spent? Well, it was spent on companies, which then in turn raises the price of the stocks of those companies. So as long as you were invested, you had a hedge against the rising prices of the United States. Well, if the country isn't growing, stock prices aren't going up, nobody has jobs, while simultaneously everything's getting more expensive, it's kind of the worst situation to be in.
Yeah. And, you know, those three elements you talked about, slow growth, inflation, and high unemployment, people might be listening and they might be going, wait a minute, we have record low unemployment. Joe Biden keeps talking about record low unemployment, but we've tried to provide some clarity. And by the way, Josh joins me every Monday on the Bruce Hooley Show here on The Answer for Money Monday at 12:30 p.m. Mondays. I'm not sure we talked about this on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show, but we dug into those job numbers a little bit, thanks to a study from, I think it was Luke Rosiak at the Daily Wire, where the jobs
have primarily been part-time jobs, and the jobs have primarily gone to non-citizens. And so when you say jobs, and the number, the last one I think was 330,000, you think, oh, okay, job. We think of a job as this takes care of all my bills as a family. Those are not really the jobs that we're seeing, and there are a lot of reasons for that. Increasing the mandatory minimum wage. Employers react to that by either raising prices or by cutting hours so you don't qualify. This goes all the way back to Obamacare, where if you worked a certain number of hours, you were entitled to certain medical benefits, and a lot of companies got around that by cutting hours. So the jobs market, when people say, wait, how can you have stagflation when the numbers don't say that unemployment is going up? It's not your father's unemployment number, really.
Not at all. And the other thing that we uncovered when we talked about that was, I want to say about a third of those jobs were governmental jobs.
70,000, yes, correct.
So, you know, why is that important? Obviously, people still have a job if it's a governmental job, and then they're purchasing money and putting, or purchasing things and putting money back into the economy, and that's good. But governmental jobs don't create anything.
Mm-hmm.
So governmental jobs do not add to GDP. You could argue they distract from GDP. They're taking tax dollars and then redistributing it to those particular occupations. So, you know, when you look at unemployment, I think what you're really alluding to is it telling the whole story? While it looks good, is it as good as we think? And I think we would all argue that probably not. So the danger zone that we're getting to is if we keep on seeing poor GDP growth, if we keep on seeing inflation not get to where we need it to be, while simultaneously seeing unemployment numbers not that attractive, we're heading toward that kind of a danger zone. And then add on top of that all the other warning signs like the inverted yield curve, et cetera. And we're heading down a path that probably we don't want to head down if we can avoid it.
No, and if you're, the conventional wisdom is, if you're in retirement already, then it's bad for you if there's inflation because prices are going up and theoretically your income is not going up because you have a fixed income stream. That may not be the case. So at Aptus, when you're dealing with clients here, do you have to be nimble and get them into and out of different investments because of some of these market conditions that we're seeing right now? Or would you take issue with the fact that there's this general belief out there that inflation is bad for people if they're already in retirement or entering retirement?
I think we would all prefer to have inflation not really be in the system and we don't have to worry about it, but there's always going to be some level of inflation. I think when you look to investing, we know kind of, or at least we all should know, that if you invest in stocks over the long run, you are rewarded and rewarded handsomely. The problem is, when you're retired, you're not looking at, I want to make sure that this money grows in 30 years. You say, I need this money to provide an income for me over the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So, you know, would you asked, how do we invest at Aptus and do we, you know, kind of shift around things? I wouldn't say by any means we're actively managing this on a daily basis by the way of day trading, but I think you would be relatively foolish to not alter your strategy based upon economic conditions, particularly as volatility is increasingly concerning to you, which means I'm in or near retirement. That's when volatility becomes important. When you're 20 years old, who cares if the market goes down 20% this year? As long as I average a 9% rate of return over the next 30 years, I'm good. So what do we do? Well, we're looking at environments like we're looking at right now and saying, well, you know, interest rates are pretty high. So how do we take advantage of interest rates in the fixed portion of our portfolio? There seems to be a significant delineation between certain types of stocks in certain categories. Are some of those overvalued? Doesn't mean they can't keep running, but if they crash, they're going to crash a heck of a lot harder, historically speaking, than some of the others. So do you start kind of leaning in and leaning out of certain categories? I think you should, and we certainly do.
Josh Pick, Bruce Hooley with you. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. Aptus Wealth Management is located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. If you'd like to get more information on some of these concepts that we talk about, get answers, get information, I say knowledge is power. And for my wife and I, when we met with Josh and his team and became clients, we gained peace of mind with our investments. That I can't put a price on. Take advantage of that free consultation by setting up your appointment. 614-917-1040 is their office number to make your appointment. You can make your appointment online. The appointment is not online, but you can make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And you can be a client outside the area if possible. They would like the consultation to take place in person at their offices. Again, their web address is Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Okay, so I saw a story on money.com this week, Money Magazine site, that inflation is good for people with debt. I'm thinking, okay, I get that. You've got a mortgage at 2%. Inflation's going up. Theoretically, your wages are going up. Try to keep pace with inflation. But Dave Ramsey would fall out of his chair if anybody ever said debt is good. And I'm guessing most people who get to retirement, the housing piece is probably something they've already taken care of. What's your reaction when you hear a headline like that, inflation is good for people with debt?
Well, I'm a strong believer that in most economies, there's a bull market somewhere. So there's always a silver lining somewhere in the world. If you want to look at debt and say there's a silver lining to debt and it's inflation, okay, well, let's use your housing example. If I bought a house for $400,000 and I have a $300,000 mortgage and the house is appreciating because of inflation, and now I have a $500,000 house and I only owe $300,000, then my equity position went up. If inflation goes up and wages, again, this does not apply to stagflation necessarily, but if wages continue to keep up, and now I'm holding a 2.75% interest rate on a fixed, like you said, well, then as a percentage of my overall income, my payment goes down. But again, I think we would all agree that no inflation would be better than 20% inflation.
Yeah, amen.
So, you know, I think there's a delicate balancing act, which is why the Fed keeps on throwing out numbers like we'd like to see inflation at 2%. On top of that, if you want to think about it on a kind of a macro level, we talk oftentimes about the U.S. debt, and the U.S. owes a lot of money, $35 trillion, something like that.
Yeah, do we ever.
Which is a number that's hard to even wrap your head around. We have to pay interest payments on that debt.
Mm-hmm.
If interest rates remain high because we cannot get inflation under control, then how much the country's budget goes to maintaining that debt? If you just view the country as a family, their credit card payment is going up and up and up and up and up. Mm-hmm. So there's a vested interest by the Fed and the United States government to drive that inflation down so that we can drive interest rates back down.
So as we've chatted about effective investment for retirement, and I know this is a conversation you have with every client who comes in for the free consultation at Aptus, volatility. What's your tolerance for it? What can it do to your investments based upon where you are in this approach to retirement or in retirement? Of the three components that we now are concerned about kind of coalescing and causing stagflation, slow economic growth, unemployment increasing, and inflation. I saw a quote from an economist this week. She said, "I worry more about sticky inflation than I worry about a recession." And we've heard, you know, the economy's going into recession. It's not going into recession. There's all this debate about, are we in a recession? Do you share that view, or of those three components, like which one is, from an investment perspective, as you serve your clients and you're legally obligated to do what's best for them, you're a fiduciary investment counselor, that's what that means. Which one of those is the one that if you could wave a magic wand and get it under control would be best for your clients and what they're trying to accomplish as they invest toward retirement?
I would say a recession is the worst. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't want a recession because a recession typically means a systemic decline in almost every asset class because everything is, for the most part, bad. If you want to think about a terrible recession, I would arguably debate maybe even a depression. Mm-hmm. Think 08, 09.
Yep.
What did well in 08 and 09? I mean, you could argue bonds, but I would say anybody who lived through that probably said not a whole lot did really, really well. So recession is worse. Sticky inflation, I would say if we get stuck with that, consistency becomes more important. So what you don't want is a huge volatile ride amongst inflation and interest rates swinging up and down, which is why the Fed has been kind of, they've been holding their cards a little bit tight to their chest, saying, we're going to wait and see, which is a good approach, I think. The real question, though, I think if we circle back, you had said, well, you know, I talk with clients all the time, and what are they saying, and what do you predict? I had a conversation with a client today, and they said, you know, as you're looking at the economy today, how much risk do you think I should be taking? Which is a very broad question.
Yeah, it is.
Well, one, I don't think you should be taking any risk. I mean, you don't have to take any risk, but, you know, it's kind of a piece of the puzzle that we have to do. My question back to him was, how much do you need to take? Because there are certain people that have certain amounts of dollars that are almost required to take a certain amount of risk to give them any semblance of an opportunity to combat inflation, generate enough income, et cetera. In this particular person's case, they don't need a lot of income as a percentage of their overall asset base, which you would think is great. But then that old Mr. Fear and Greed come pulling back in. And on one hand, the fear is I don't want to take any risk if I don't have to take it. But I also want to see my money double every X amount of years. Well, those two things don't work hand in hand. So I think the first answer you have to come up with is, what do I need my money to do to satisfy what I need it to do? If I need $2,000 a month, I need to create $2,000 a month as predictably as possible. If I then have a budget, if you will, for risk on top of that, then I should be at least considering that risk metric so that I can let, you know, my assets grow and be a good steward of my money and do great things with it, pass it on to whomever, my family or some sort of charitable organization.
You know, as I listen to some of the commercials that you run here on our air, you talk about people struggling to kind of make sense of where we are right now in our economy. And this economist that I just cited talking about stagflation said that, you know, it's hard now to get low-cost debt, surging stock rallies, hefty government support. She said consumers are feeling the squeeze of mounting debts at elevated interest rates while inflation eats into wage gains. These are real concerns that people have. And these are, you know, I don't know, are they exacerbated by the closer you get to retirement? I mean, she's decrying what she refers to as a disjointed market condition where growth investments and value investments are moving in opposite directions. You've dealt with all kinds of different economic conditions over the years. Is this one of the more difficult times to make sense of what's out there on the horizon?
Well, they're all difficult, but today certainly looks glim, if I'm being honest. And I feel like you can say that almost any year, but we have a lot of stuff stacked against us, you know, up into including the election, multiple conflicts around the world, which seemingly are always a problem, but it certainly seems like a little bit more extreme than the norm. And then you add in all these, you know, domestic issues that we have that you had just mentioned. Add on top of that, where we have what you could argue is a little bit of a bubble being formed between the disparity between value stocks, and I'm talking about specifically large companies, value stocks and growth stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked many times about the Magnificent Seven. Well, every one of those Magnificent Seven is arguably a growth stock. And growth has completely and utterly led the charge in the stock market for the last several years. Well, if you look at the disparity between growth and value stocks over time, there does seem to be this delineation where there will be a period of time where growth does really, really well and value kind of lags behind the boat. And then that will kind of have a changing of the guard. And I think that we're probably looking down the barrel of that changing of the guard. When that will happen, of course, I won't be perfect in predicting it. But if you look at everything that's going on in the world and you say, well, I feel like I'm a little overweighted in growth, could now be a logical time if you feel like volatility is going to be picking up and you feel like inflation's not going anywhere. Maybe there's a potential stagflation. Maybe. Then, well, it could logically make sense to back off the accelerator a little bit. Maybe look towards some value-based stocks.
Josh Pick and the Aptus Wealth Management team offer you a free consultation to get more information about these matters. They're complicated questions, and look, retirement's exceedingly important. Sherry and I got to a point where retirement was not like around the corner, but it was on the horizon, and we realized, boy, if we mess this up, the consequences of that could be incurable. So we took advantage of the free consultation at Aptus. We were very much enlightened as to what our options were, options that we didn't even know about. And Josh and his team did a great job of explaining it. And so we're happy clients, very, very satisfied clients, no longer having to worry about things that we worried about before. I'd encourage you to take advantage of that consultation by setting up your appointment either online, Aptus Wealth Management, aptuswealth.com, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com, or making a call to their office and setting up your appointment via the phone, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Here's a headline from the Wall Street Journal. I'm paywalled, so I can't read it, but it was like, here's the headline. America's economy is number one. That means trouble. What? Says solid growth, big deficits, and a strong dollar stir memories of past crises. And it brings up the housing crisis, and it brings up the late 70s when we had the Arab oil price. I mean, look at that. America's economy is number one. Good. Wait a minute. No, that means trouble. So it is complicated. And with all the different investment vehicles out there and people having different goals in retirement, individual conversations and sort of understanding why you're doing what you're doing with your investments, maybe never more important than now.
Well, and expectations are everything. When you go see your doctor, what's the first thing you ask him if there's something wrong? What are my choices?
What are my choices?
Right. And then what is the likelihood of success of each one of these choices? And you look at the pro and cons. Well, investing is very similar in that there is no magic bullet, but there are a multitude of choices that react differently dependent upon your condition and your situation, same as the medical field. So, you know, as we look at somebody's portfolio, you say, here are your choices. You're not going to hear, you're 65, you have $1 million, and you're going to retire in 11 years. So that puts you in our moderate portfolio. So good talk, and we're done here. Sign here, sign here. That's a very narrow view. While there's plenty of companies who do that, does that really synopsize who you are? That's those four questions just rounded out. So what we're going to do is go through a learning process, a learning curve of here's your choices. Here's how these different things react. And in different market conditions, this is how these things typically react. So you can see in a current environment like we are today, here's the pros and cons of this and the market that we might be in the future. Now we're kind of prognosticating and guessing a little bit, but logically guessing. This is what we'll do well. So this is where we're going to lean in and lean out of different things. But ultimately, you might say, I appreciate all of your technical analysis, but you just got done telling me that if I earn a 5% average annual rate of return, I can retire and do everything that I dreamed of. How do I do that? We go, well, that's easy. We're just going to go back to this category. Check, check, check. No risk. Let's move on with our lives. So it's up to you. You get to design you get to design your own destiny. Not that we're not going to give you advice, nor do you need to be a complete expert, but you have to be completely and utterly bought into your own trajectory. Or if you don't know what to expect, you're going to make terrible decisions when it goes the wrong way.
You know, we've talked over the last, probably less so in the last couple months, but I remember a time where it seemed every week we were talking about this inverted yield curve, where the conventional way it works is if someone has your money for a longer period of time, you get a higher return. They have it for a shorter period of time, you get less of a return. The inverted yield curve means it's inverted. The shorter period of time you have, bought a bond, for instance, you get a higher return. And there persists this thing that, hey, this always predicts a recession. It always predicts a recession when this happens. And that sort of gained traction again this week when the GDP number came out. If you're in retirement, is it as easy as saying, like right now, like, okay, well, you get a higher return on, you know, bonds. So let's just park it in bonds right now and you don't have to tie it up for 10 years.
Well, and it better be short-term bonds than that, yeah. or CDs or a yeah. money market. The money market's the best argument that I hear most of the time is I can get 5.1, 5.2% just in a money market. It's completely liquid, no risk, essentially. And why don't I just put my money there? Well, because what's the objective of the Fed right now? To lower interest mm-hmm. rates.
Yeah.
So when those interest rates go lower, what happens to your money market? It goes lower.
It goes lower.
So I've told this story before, but I'll give you an example. I had a client early in my career that had a treasury that was paying very significantly. She was making about 6,000. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I feel like it was about $45,000 a year off of her portfolio. Well, then 10 years later, now we're into the early 90s, mm-hmm. right? Late mid 90s, different game. It's hard to tell somebody if you want to do the same strategy, you're going to go from $45,000 a year to $15,000 a year. But that's really that's why you have to have these different allocations in these different buckets that react different ways. So your income doesn't get these drastic changes along the way. So my argument to why don't I just put it in fixed is that looks great for now if you have a strategy for what you're going to do later. But if you're saying this is just now my new strategy, you're going to be met with a wall that you weren't expecting.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon. Like I all the time hear people complain about whatever the situation is. And it is necessary to ask the question, okay, so what's your solution if? Do you have a plan? That's the one thing that Sherry and I figured out when we were talking with Josh and his team at Aptus about our retirement was here's one track you can take. Here's another track you can take. It's called a blueprint for a reason because a blueprint is a plan. You wouldn't just start slapping some studs together and start building a house. You would have a plan. You would have a foundation. You would understand why you're building this here and why you're putting that there. That's what they do at Aptus when they have consultation with you, is they get to know you. They get to know your risk tolerance. They get to know what you've done in terms of investing so far and where you can go from there. And the choice will ultimately be yours, but you'll understand the choices that you're making. So take advantage of the Aptus Wealth Management free consultation, 614-917-1040. 614-917-1040. Make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Office is located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. And we'll be back with more next. We appreciate your time listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. Their firm is located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. And they offer you a free consultation so you can get to know them. They can get to know you and you can gauge whether you guys with them are a perfect marriage as you invest toward retirement. I'm an Aptus client. My wife and I are very happy with the performance that we're getting from our investments. And I would encourage you to take advantage of that because at the very least, you'll get better clarity, better information, and maybe you'll walk out with the same peace of mind that I did. You won't know unless you take advantage of it. So set that appointment up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, or by making your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And I think in talking to you over the years, Josh, one of the things that I understand better now than I certainly did before was that I kind of looked at retirement as save, 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 invest, 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 have a pot of money and live off that and hope it lasts long enough. I never really thought about, like, after I stopped working and stopped getting a check every week, that retirement was kind of a different way to draw income out of my investments. So that kind of brings up a question as to, does your life change when you get into retirement? Does it have to change? Does what you're spending on certain things, is there a necessity for change? Is a budget something that if you've lived without a budget before you get into retirement, do you have to have a budget in retirement?
Well, I would say that everybody's retirement's different based upon the resources that they have available and how they want to live retirement. But there's certainly some kind of industry standard guidelines.
Right. We've heard the 4% rule, right? What? You take 4% of your nest egg, and if you do that, you'll be fine. You'll outlive your investments.
It'll be adjusted for inflation as long as it's invested appropriately, et cetera. I think, you know, to step back, should everybody have a budget? I think, you know, whether you have a budget now or you don't have a budget, remember that when you retire, you're going to have all the time to do anything you've ever wanted to do as long as your health is good. So you almost have to have a budget or you can go off the rails pretty quickly. There has been a tremendous amount of research done that they're now, rather than looking at retirement as kind of a linear thing, meaning that every single year I'm going to need an inflation adjustment. So I start retirement at $5,000 a month, and the next year I'm going to need exactly 4% more than that or whatever the percentage is that you assume. And they've kind of shifted that to something called the retirement smile.
Okay.
The retirement smile says that in the beginning years of your retirement, you're going to spend more money than you will in the middle years. Makes sense, right? I'm going to take all the trips I ever wanted to take, do all the fixing up on the house so I don't have to worry about it when I get older, et cetera. Maybe I want to buy a car that's going to last me, right? And then in the middle years, you know, as we get into our late 70s, people tend to stay at home, stay close to home. They want to be close to their doctors, stay around family.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much traveling involved. So there's kind of a drop in income need. And then, you know, unfortunately, towards the tail end of our life, medical expenses tend to get a little bit more expensive. So it kind of swings back up again. And that's a helpful thing to know from a planning perspective, because if you kind of do all the math on that, it's actually less expensive in retirement than the linear way of thinking. So people who didn't think they could retire looking at the linear side of things might have a better opportunity if they look at things in a more pragmatic, practical way of the way that life kind of carries on. But the question that I get all the time is, how do I come up with a budget?
Right.
I've never budgeted before. What, do you want me to write down how much my cable bill is and how much my, do you really want me to, we're going to spend $393 a month on going out to eat. And I have seen these, by the way.
Really?
And you can usually tell that somebody either padded it dramatically or they came up with a number that they wanted to end in and then kind of backfilled in all the numbers to make it work. I think the easier way is this. How much are you living on currently? Well, I don't know. Well, you get a check every 2 weeks, right? Well, yeah. Well, how much is your check? After tax, after you've had all your deductions, your 401k, how much is your check? Multiply that out by a monthly amount. Now tell me, how much do you have left at the end of the month? If the answer is zero, that's how much you're living on.
That's right.
That's a good benchmark to start on. If you say, well, and I hear this a lot, well, I have younger clients that are in their 50s that are looking at retirement. They go, well, a third of my money's going to my kids. So the kids aren't going to be there. Okay, is it really going to the kids, number one?
I was going to say, wait, are you sure the kids aren't still going to need it after they're not there?
But this is the easiest way that I can tell people to do it is, one, start with that, how much do I actually receive? And then secondly, if you're saying, you know what, I think I'm going to retire in about a year. For the next 6 months, pick a budget and live on it. No matter what, live on it. If you realize that you either drastically undershot or overshot the runway, then that's a good indicator of maybe I'm not ready or I'm ready yet. Because the last thing that you want to do is go, nope, $5,000 a month. I can live on it. It's going to be a perfect life. Then you retire and go, really want my job back. $5,000 a month was not the number for me. And I'm just arbitrarily using that number, of course. But you at least have some semblance of understanding because you've lived it. Right. So give it a shot. Test run it.
So I know generalizations are dangerous, but I'm wondering, like, for a couple that together is making $150,000 a year, is there a typical reduction in that they live off of? You mentioned the retirement smile where you spend more early on. I saw a story this week quoting Larry Fink of BlackRock, the CEO, and they're a big asset management company, where he said, you spend about 80% of what, in your first year of retirement, you'll spend about 80% of what your income was before you retired. That seemed high to me.
Well, it's all dependent, right? Let me give you an example. If you're putting 20% of your income into your 401k, well, you're already at 80%, and you haven't even paid taxes or taken out anything for anything else yet.
Right.
And if you're working, you're paying about 7.5% towards Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, which when you retire, you won't be. So right there, we're already down to 22.5% just between a 20% 401k contribution and Social Security. And then when you do retire, your taxes most likely will go down. If for nothing else, at least 15% of your Social Security won't be taxable. So typically, I think that's a good kind of, if you want a rule of thumb, it's not a terrible one to have because it's very cushioned in its approach, I believe. But what I find is that the percentage is far less than that.
So it's interesting. You just brought up a couple of questions that if I were trying to determine whether I should retire or not, I wouldn't have thought of those things where you talked about, well, this will be less, this will be less, this will be less. Is it common for you to have conversations with clients who are weighing whether is now the time for me to retire or do I need to keep working?
Yeah, all the time. And typically it's because they've anecdotally kind of come up with numbers where they go, well, I make $100,000 a year now. And if I add up Social Security and 4% of my investments, it doesn't equal $100,000. Well, yeah, but do you need $100,000? Well, that's what I'm making, and it seems to be working fine. Well, how much are you living on? And then they quickly come to the determination that they're living on $4,500 a month. They go, oh, well, how do we get to that net number? So the easier way to kind of do the math is don't try and come up with a gross. We'll do that for you because not all grosses are the same. It depends on where you draw the money from. Just come up with the net, and then we'll back into the gross.
Take advantage of the free consultation. Get these kinds of questions answered. Find out the information that you lack or gain understanding, maybe greater understanding into matters that you think you understand right now. You can do that by calling Aptus Wealth Management, 614-917-1040. You can make your appointment online at their website, which is aptuswealth.com, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. If you're wondering where they're physically located, it's not far from 23 and 270 in Lewis Center off Route 750. Okay, so we have chatted about the changing face of kind of people's work lives where people of my parents' generation, they worked a job for 40 years, they had a pension, they got Social Security, they got a pension. You probably still encounter people who had a pension. You're going to get to a point probably in the next 5 to 10 years where most everybody's had multiple jobs and 401ks and pockets of money here, there, and everywhere, which, as you well know, is pretty much what I turned over to you. But for people who had that pension and they're trying to decide what's the smartest way for me to take my pension, what are the determinants as to whether they should take it in a lump sum or whether they should take it in an annuity payment?
Well, not all pensions are created equal first. For example, some pensions only give you a certain amount of choices. We'll give you a pension, but it's got to be a single life. Well, what happens if I die? Is my wife taken care of? Well, no, it dies with you.
Wow.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's rare, but What if I want to have a joint life and I want to make sure that somebody gets money for 20 years? Well, we don't offer that. So then the real drastic difference between pensions is my pension adjusted for inflation? So if you work for the state of Ohio, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. If you work for Nationwide Insurance, the answer is no. So $1,000 a month today is not nearly the same as what $1,000 a month will be worth 20 years from now. So you have to accommodate for that some way. The benefits to that pension, though, remain the same. It's guaranteed. I can't outlive it, at least if you make that decision. I don't have to worry about outspending my money. That's a huge advantage. But have we thought about that pension is backed typically by the institution that you worked for? You know, having a pension from Enron probably didn't treat you really well.
No.
So do people consider who is the employer that I'm working for, and can I count on them to be around for the next 20 years? And is the pension solid enough to make sure that it can, you know, meet its obligations? So once we've kind of gotten through all of those things, then we start looking at what makes the most sense. I know that seems like we were deciding what made the most sense, but those are just kind of like the barriers to entry to even have conversations, because you might come out with the conclusion that while I like the number that they're throwing out, I don't trust the institution and mm-hmm. I'm going to move it anyway. But that does not necessarily mean that you're giving up the lifetime income. If you take the lump sum, you could turn around. All a pension is an annuity payment. Mm-hmm. So you could go shop every insurance company under the sun and say, will you guys pay me more? And the answer might be yes. So I'm going to take my lump sum and create my own private pension, mm-hmm. eliminate the risk of my company, and still accomplish the same thing. And you can do those with inflation adjustments, by the way. But even in doing both of those things, if I elect the pension option, I've effectively given up control. I'm going to get $1,000 a month every single year or every single month for the rest of my life, no matter what. It's not going to be $1,002. It's not going to be $900. What if I found out that I have terminal cancer and I want to go do something for the next 6 months? Well, I hope you can do it on $1,000 a month, because that's all you're getting. Whereas if you had this lump sum, you could have went, all bets are off. I'm going to spend $100,000 of my lump sum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both, but, you know, you got to start thinking about this in a holistic approach. What about my life expectancy? I want to take the pension. Nobody in my family lives past 70. I'm retiring at 68. Probably a bad choice for you. You should probably take the lump sum. But I think what people do, again, those two most powerful emotions, fear and greed, I don't want to outlive my money. This looks like a good amount. I know I can retire on it. I'm just going to take the pension payout. Might not be the best choice.
Do you find a wide disparity in, as you assess all the nuances of these different pensions out there, do you find a wide disparity in ones that are, I guess, for lack of a better term, classify as consumer-friendly or company-friendly? Do pensions tend to favor the company more than they do the consumer? Or I would imagine you encounter a wide variety of this one's easy to work with and it's good for the people who worked for the company, and this one is maybe not that good, or maybe not as good as it could be.
Yeah, private companies widely range. You'll see some where it'll say your lump sum is $100,000 or you can get X dollars per month, and you do the math on it and go, there's no way you could beat this X dollars per month on the $100,000. I mean, this company is they're doing one of two things. They're either saying, we want to make sure nobody takes the lump sum, mm-hmm. or they're saying, we really want to reward our employees and we're going to give them far more than a lump sum would provide anywhere else. The example of that I would say is if you look at PRS and STRS, historically speaking, they were very, very lucrative on a pension payout. And you have the component of inflation adjustments. Almost always over the years, you would say, somebody would come in with a PRS pension and say, do you think I should take the lump sum? And as long as they had a reasonable life expectancy and they didn't have any extraneous circumstances, almost always you would say, take the pension. That's changing because mortality tables change, payouts change, how the pension is managed changes, contracts of employees change. And I would say that you should probably start taking a peek even at those PRS and STRS pensions and at least do your due diligence and see which one makes the most sense for you, because we've beaten a lot of them here as of late.
Yeah, get that consultation and then find out what your own Aptus Retirement Blueprint plan would be. Take advantage of that by calling their office at Aptus, 614-917-1040, or making your appointment online at aptuswealth.com. That number again is 614-917-1040. You just said mortality tables changed. I've heard Social Security referred to as the biggest Ponzi scheme in history. Is it a Ponzi scheme because We don't have as many people working now as we had before, or is it because mortality tables have changed? And I think I'm right on this. When Social Security first came out, wasn't life expectancy lower than the age at which you became eligible for Social Security?
Was that, yeah, it was.
That seemed like, you know, hey, whoopee, I get a Social Security check. I beat the system here. But that's definitely not the case now. People live can live a very long time after they're eligible for Social Security.
Yeah, I might be a little bit off on the statistics here, but I believe in 1935 when Social Security was created, it was actually called the Older Workers Retirement Act, if I'm not mistaken. And that didn't have quite the zing to it as Social Security, so they renamed it. But at the time, I want to say that there were 11 people paying in for every one person collecting. You couldn't collect until you were 65, and the average life expectancy was 63.
Mm.
So you have all these people paying in and then people collecting for a very short period of time. I believe those stats now are 4 or 5 to 1 are paying. You can collect as early as 62, and the average life expectancy is, you know, around at least 80, depending on what statistic you look at. So it's changed dramatically. That does not take away from, you asked me bluntly, is it a Ponzi scheme? By definition, a Ponzi scheme is people are investing the money. You're not actually investing their money. You're turning around and giving that money to somebody else. And the answer is yes. Then by those definitions, it's a Ponzi scheme, because historically speaking, we had this kind of increase in pool of money because we had obviously more people paying in than collecting. We had people dying very, very quickly. There was a surplus. People often refer to it as a trust fund that has kind of grown over time that's been invested. But now, because we're at a deficit, much like the rest of the United States government, it's deficit spending, we are sending out more money than people are paying in. And somewhere in the early 2030s, that trust fund is going to run aground. It's going to run out of money. So the government is going to be faced with some difficult questions. One, how do we fix it? And two, I believe you have to amend the Constitution to borrow money to fix it. So we're either going to have to amend the Constitution and or change it a lot. And there's a bunch of strategies that they've thrown out there that we can talk about if you want, about what are some of the ideas that have been thrown around. Some of them more scary than the other. But I think ultimately the crux of it, at least my generation, Gen Xers, we've been talking about, is it even going to be there to begin with? Should we bank on it?
Yes.
And the answer is it will be there, but will it be there in the same form? I don't know. Even in its existing form, though, is Social Security enough to retire on? And most people would say no. Social Security by and of itself for a single person puts you somewhere right at or below the poverty line.
What's the check, like $1,700 now? Average?
The average check is somewhere around
$1,700 or $1,800.
Yeah. The max check, I believe, if you wait until 70 and you're in the max payer category, it's somewhere around $4,000.
Yeah.
But remember, if you're in that max payer category, you are used to living on a heck of a lot more than $4,000
a month
because you've been taxed equivalently. So, you know, the answer is don't bank purely on Social Security. But today, even more than before, if you're younger or at least 10 years out from retirement or even approaching retirement, there's now a risk that it might not look the same. I'm not in the camp that it's going to go away. You can't bank on it at all. But I don't think it can look the same. It's either going to keep paying out at the same rate that it is, in which case we're printing money to fund it, which means inflation goes up, which means your dollars aren't as valuable, or they're going to have to diminish the benefit to keep the virility of
keep the pot of money there to draw from.
Yeah,
sure. And one of the fixes for it, of course, is, well, okay, if you've got too much going out, not enough coming in, is tax. We can tax people. And one of the real scary quote-unquote solutions that I've heard is taxing unrealized capital gains, which is a way of introducing to me a crazy concept that would hurt people who have done things right investing for their retirement.
Well, this is just another example of people throwing, politicians in particular, throwing out stuff, not even understanding the way the real world works. For example, if you want to tax my unrealized gains, how am I going to pay the tax? The only way I can pay the tax is by selling said positions to realize said gains to pay the tax. So if you look at somebody like, let's say, Elon Musk, great example. Large in part, majority of his wealth is in two stocks, right? SpaceX and which is a private company, but really public company would be Tesla. So if you look at his actual cash position, it's not that significant. He reinvests everything. So you're going to tax him on his $200 billion worth of X, whatever, I shouldn't say X because that's actually one of the names of his companies,
yeah.
But on Y, right? How's he going to pay it? He's going to have to sell shares of the company. Well, is that good for the investors of the company if the owner is dumping shares at a rapid rate? No, it's absolutely terrible. And we see this repetitively in tax kind of layouts. And you and I were talking offline about Biden releasing his 2025 budget proposal, where he's adding a historic increase in the capital gains and qualified dividend realm, taking it all the way up to just shy of 45%. And he's saying, well, you know, that's going to affect the wealthy, blah, blah, blah. This is all political rhetoric. This is getting people on the page of saying we need to go after rich people. And the only way we're going to fund the company is by punishing these rich folks. This will never pass, ever, ever, ever. He even is talking about doing a wealth cap, so you can only be so rich.
Yeah.
Which, you know, look at how many people Amazon employs or Walmart employs. So if you would have capped those people out, those companies, as you know it, would not exist the same way that you know them.
Yeah, and on unrealized capital gains, you get taxed on the gains of an investment when you sell it. If you're going to tax, let's say somebody's heavily invested in McDonald's, they've got $100,000 in McDonald's stock, but they haven't sold it, they want to, unrealized capital gains means they would be taxing you on what you're holding, but don't have
access
income
to
from it yet.
Yeah, you don't even have access to it.
Would it work the same on your home? If you've paid off your home and it's a $400,000 home, like every year you got to pay, you know, 25% tax on the fact you live there?
This is where it becomes a very slippery slope, much like the wealth cap. So the wealth cap will be introduced as nobody should be worth $100 billion. All right, well, who arbitrarily set that amount? Now, where do we go from here? Now it's $50 billion next year. Now it's a, now all of a sudden we're talking about nobody should be able to have $1 million in their account. This is, and again, I might be putting on my tinfoil hat a little bit, but it certainly seems like a little bit of scratching towards that S word that we don't like to talk about in the way of socialism. The point is, it will never get passed. Remember who sponsors and funds a political campaign. So you're going to go to, you truly believe that you're going to go to the 1,000 richest people in the country and say, help me get there. I'm going to tax you twice as much. It's not going to happen.
No, it's not. But hey, look, I mean, I understand why people worry about it. I mean, I see these things and I worry about it. I think, well, you know, a lot of things have happened in the last couple of years that I thought were too crazy to even be given a hearing, but they're getting heard and they're getting put forward by a lot of people. It just underscores the importance of taking advantage of that free consultation with Josh and his team at Aptus. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, or Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. What would you say here in about the minute that we have left to just, I don't know, not necessarily talk people down off the ledge, but how they should view current conditions out there? And we're in a political election year, so we're kind of in an area where I'm not sure that everything that's said is said with much realism attached to it. It's probably said in a manner to kind of try to curry favor with voters.
Yeah, well, there's always something negative to look at year over year over year. The next year is always going to, you know, it's the panic button. And this time's different, when in reality, this too shall pass. However, the way that you get through difficult times is through knowledge and understanding and creating a plan through it. You wouldn't sail across the ocean. Doesn't mean ocean's a scary place. Mm. People sail across it all the time. But the only way they get across it is because they have a plan. They have a backup plan. They have a tertiary plan and they understand how to sail. So I would highly recommend that everybody, to get that peace, that comfort, understand how money works, come up with a plan, and then execute the plan.
Yeah, understand the consequences, understand, you know, there is a way to do it, and understand the danger. And maybe the markets aren't as consequential, or maybe your investments, you might not think, are as consequential as sailing across the ocean. But you'd be foolish to do either one without having a plan and without using experts to help you craft that plan. That's what they are at Aptus. 614-917-1040. Fiduciaries required to legally do what, or legally obligated to do what is best for you. Take advantage of that consultation. 614-917-1040. And Josh, we'll see you again next week.
You as well. Thanks, Bruce.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.